You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feeds it right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
All right, everybody. This is the Hockey Royalty Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. I am Randon McMahon. You can find me at Rando Commando. Today's guest is Joey Paterino. What's going on, Joe?
Randon, how are we doing? I'm doing great tonight. How's things?
It's going great, man. Just a little late here on Central Time, and you're on the East Coast. So we're doing a little late night pod.
That's right. What better time to talk about the rain? Why not?
I know. I feel like I need a scotch and a cigar over here. You know, like that's what we feel going on. Just so you guys know, you can find this podcast at royalty_pod or our network at hockey_royalty. Joe, where can they find you on Twitter?
That is at JW Paterino.
That's good, my man. So now that we got all the pleasantries out of the way and we're getting right into it. We're talking about the rain today, guys. So, you know, a lot of content that came out about the Kings in the offseason with Philip Deneau and all that. But, you know, we don't want to leave the AHL conglomerate there undetected. You know, you don't want to leave them in the corner with their own drink. We want to invite them over and talk about them a little bit. So, you know, speaking about bringing them over, I mean, there was a lot of hype coming up in this season, I thought, from a lot of the Rains fans on Twitter and everything like that. You know, the cavalcade of prospects that they're coming. I think we had 8 new ones playing their first year of pro hockey into the lineup. So like, what was your excitement level? Like, where were you feeling, you know, coming into this rain season?
So it's like you said, there's so many first year guys coming in, and it's so exciting because you've seen all these articles and people across hockey talking about how, you know, this King system has just become one of the best in hockey with the likes of obviously Byfield most recently, but Kaliev, and he's coming off a pretty good World Juniors. You had Alex Turcotte, Fagamo, Kupari, Tyler Madden, Akil Thomas scores the game winner for Canada in the World Juniors. So there's all these prospects, and it's like they've all come together here at once. And because of COVID, guys like Byfield and certain other guys that maybe not had the chance to play in the American Hockey League before are getting a chance to play full time. So it was, yeah, hype is a great word. It was so exciting to get in. And not to mention the first, the head coach, John Wroblewski, coming off the National Development Team program. So he's used to working with kids and developing kids. And it just seemed like the perfect fit at the perfect time for the Ontario Reign.
Yeah, I was, my exact face was like that Jack Nicklaus gif of him just like staring into the distance and like bobbing his head. Like that's with a maniacal grin. Like that's how I felt. And, you know, it was just like going into the summertime, you know, especially with COVID, it was just like, okay, the draft is finally happening, you know? And it was just, you know, we're sitting there and going down the lottery and boom, our card does not get flipped over. Like, oh, we got the lottery. All right, like, where are we drafting now? Like, okay, this is kind of interesting, you know? We're waiting on the last one. Are we going to get number one? Are we going to get Lafreniere or whatever? And it flips it over, and it was like the team to be determined. I was like, you know, you kind of had that little downshift of your shoulders, like, oh, man. But then you're like, oh, we're getting Byfield or Stützle. Like, that's going to be great. And then we spent the whole summer, like, trying to court one of these people. It was like summer camp. You know, you're trying to find the girl that you want to spend the rest of your life with. And it was just the debate back and forth for a couple months.
Did you have a preference?
Byfield.
Yeah.
I thought like if you wanted, for me, it was like there was a lot of impatient Kings fans, like me included somewhat, because they have never been through a rebuild or really doesn't know what that's about. And like Stützle would have sold tickets if there was fans, and like he would have sold jerseys right away because he would have made the roster. So like, I understand like from that point of view, but as you found out this year, like you have wingers like Tarasenko and guys that come available all the time. Like, when's the last time a 6'5" center that came available that was a first liner? Like, hardly ever. Like, you know, you just take take the swing on upside.
That's a differentiator for me too, is, and we've seen it in Los Angeles, been blessed to watch Andre Kopitar for so long. These guys, these big centermen who can skate like the wind, you just don't come across them too often. That's not a knock on Stützle by any means. Like, the kid's a freak talent, and he's going to be a great player in the NHL. But to have a guy that can legitimately just dominate games at both ends of the ice, down the middle of the ice, like Byfield, we hope will do. It was, and obviously for the Kings too. And Mark United's talked about it, how they just couldn't pass that up. So,
you know, I wonder if talking like, cause you listen to United, and like they said, like back when Doughty got drafted, like they were going to pick Doughty, whether they got one or two, you know, obviously, you know, Lafreniere was the clear number one for almost everybody, but I wonder if they would have went Byfield if they were number one.
That's a good question.
Just because of the way they talk about him, like he's just a unicorn with his height and speed and everything like that. And they could be like, oh, well, like we could find a winger in free agency, but like if this guy hits his potential, you're not going to ever find that guy, you know? Like,
this goes back to the old Dean Lombardi days of, you know, building through the middle, right? Build through down your core, goalie at that 1D and then your 1C, and that's where you build it through. So you can get a guy like Byfield, especially, listen, you know, as much as we love Kopitar, he's mid-30s at this point. So he's going to need a successor. And I know we had Turk on a number of centers already, Velarde in the system, but you see a guy of Byfield size and skating ability, you have to go in that route.
Yeah, I just think that I think it's kind of like, you know, as they say, first world problems with having, you know, all these centers in our prospect pool, but, you know, not like what 20% of people drafted in the second round, like play over 90 games, and like 37% in the first round play over 90 games. Like it's still hard to make the league no matter where you're at. Yep. And then you're relatively of how you're going to be good. Like, I'd rather have too many centers and have them go to wing. Cause as you saw this year with Velarde, like his presence in the dot was subpar. Like, and then, so that could weed some people out on whether they're going to go wing. You know, it was just kind of ecstatic. Like, I just thought like, okay, like, if Byfield hits, you're talking about a unicorn for 15 years on your team. Like, and like, why not take a shot at that?
You hope he's the next Andre Kopitar, you know?
So, I mean, I agree with you there, you know? So, you know, with all that excitement coming in, a little bit of a slow start for the Reign, you know.
You could say that.
For lack of a better term, it was, you know, we put the car in reverse thinking we were going to go forward, and it was just apparent that, you know, that this was just a different game, you know. And you had the upside of you had like the U.S. winning the gold medal, Kaliev Turcotte playing well in that tournament. And you're like, okay, like they're cruising in. Byfield had a decent tournament. You're like, okay, great. We want to see him. Like, a year ago, Samuel Fagamo was the MVP, 13 points in 8 games. Like all these guys coming in, Tyler Madden was leading the Hobie Baker till he injured his finger. Like all these things, like you mentioned, and then just the plop. And it was like, man, like there was two things for me. It was like, man, like, okay, did I miscalculate how hard the AHL is? And two, there was kind of a prospect envy type thing, you know, and I know my brothers felt it and a lot of fans felt it because you instantly want to compare prospects, even though they're 19 years old. But like you see Zegras doing well, Drysdale, who was just drafted that well the year playing first line minutes. And then you have like Seth Jarvis. He was drafted 17th in that draft and he was leading the league in points. So it was just like, for me, I was like, okay, am I missing something here or is it going on? Like, yeah. I don't know how you felt.
It's tough. It's tough. So I grew up and we've talked, like I'm from Rochester, New York. We got the AHL team, Rochester Americans here. And so growing up, they won the Calder Cup in the mid 90s. And at the time, everybody knew who the players were. They spent years in the same AHL city. It's a different game now. It is strictly development. That's not to say that the folks in Ontario, that they don't want to win. Obviously, that winning is still very, very important. But this is a developmental league. So, yeah, when you lose, what, 12 of your first 13 or something like that, you get a little like, oh, boy, first-year coach, got all these rookies, and it ain't going well. But when you take a step back and say, okay, it's a developmental league, the results, while they matter, they don't matter as much as the development. They have a coach in place who is dealt with these young kids from the development program. You've got a number of first-year guys. There were one of the younger teams in the AHL. So it's, you know, you hope maybe for a little bit of early success, but at the end of the day, it was about the development of the players. And you know, in some, maybe it's way easier to say this hindsight 2020, but some weird way, maybe it was kind of a good thing. They got kind of punched in the face early in the season and you see how they respond to it. And I thought overall, once after that first, you know, 13, 15 games or whatever it was, they had a really good rest of the season overall. So I think it was good to see the young guys, how they responded to that type of adversity and how they grew their game because yeah, it wasn't good to start the season, but there was, as much as people probably wanted to panic, you have to understand, like, it's a developmental league. So while the results matter, it's much more important that these guys are getting their ice time, getting their reps, and that's the key. And that was happening.
Yeah, it was just, you know, like you said, one of the youngest teams in the league. I think I don't remember. I did a lot of the looking back on it, but I think we had more rookie players, and it was by like two or three over any team that was playing in the AHL, like first year pros. So, yeah. You know, the team ended up going out of 40 games, went 17, 19, and 4, you know, for 38 points, finished sixth in the division. But, you know, there was some good hot streaks there. You had, I think really when it turned around, and for me, was when they sent Elias Anderson down to get some work. And, you know, he went down there in 15 games, you know, had 6 goals, 11 assists, so almost a point per game. And he's got that sandpaper to his game that I really like. Like for a skilled player, I thought he did a great job this offseason, according to him, like learning to get to the NFL. Like, what do I need to do there? Like, I can't just rely on my skill. Like, I'm going to have to, like, I can't show off my skill if I don't get minutes. So how am I going to get minutes? Like, doing more of this stuff to his game and, like, highlighting those areas. And when you have so many upper draft picks that rely solely on skill, like, you know, all shooters or all passers, or they're used to being the number one guys on their team, you know, like, you need that.
Which Anderson was. He was a high pick, too, before, you know, it didn't work out in New York. So he comes over, and he's going to be an interesting guy to see where he fits even this season. But you're right. When he came down to the AHL, he's one of those guys where I think, you know, for me, when you go up in levels, it's how quickly – it's obviously, everything's a little bit faster, and every maybe shots are a bit harder, whatever it is, but you have to make your decisions that much faster. So he may be a first line player, you know, in junior or coming through. It's why he was drafted. But if you can't process those and make those decisions at full speed, at lightning quick in your brain, then it's not going to translate the same way. So you have to adapt your game. Like you said, you're going to need to, if that's not going to work, you're going to need to kind of shift it. So when he came down to Ontario and you rattled it off, he did a very good job and he had solid numbers. So I think that probably helped his game. And I'll be interested to see where he kind of fits in this year with the big club, because is he that first line top two line winger? I don't know, but did he adjust his game enough to say, okay, I have to carve out a role here in this league. And what is that going to be? But you know what? Him coming down and changing that and maybe learning that a little bit on the fly, that's got to help the other guys in that room as well. That see, they've got a guy, this is a former first round pick who, you know, he's trying to find his way. So it came all full circle for some of those guys, where you've seen a guy who he's going through some struggles in his own right in the early part of his career. And I think it was good for the reign that the way he came down and played.
You know, and I never really thought of it until you just now, but I wonder how much playing with Muvrare really helped his psyche. And a lot of guys had trouble with the mental game with COVID that year, you know, like not being able to see friends and family and everything like that. And they're boys. I mean, they hang out in Sweden during the summertime all the time. So maybe going down and hanging out with him for a little bit, you know, cleared up his mind and he was able to put some numbers together.
There's stuff that you just never know. So that's very possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, the team didn't really fare very well. And like, where I think the biggest thing for me that I thought the team would do would be to light up the lamp. And like, they were 14.4% from the power play, third worst in the whole AHL with all those first and second round picks. Yeah. I thought that would be for sure. And, you know, I wonder, like we said, new roles with Lias, you wonder if like, okay, I'm going to have to figure out where I belong in this realm of all these prospects. I might have to play a position that I'm not used to on the power play or utilize my skills differently to help the team mature, you know, like,
and on top of that, you had guys that were, you mentioned earlier, just how deep the Kings organization is with centers. So now you've got some guys who have played center their whole lives and you get them into, you know, and some of these are first year pros. So at the highest level of their careers and saying, you know what, you're going to play a different position now. You're going to play the wing because we have enough centers. That's an adjustment. You know, it's an easier adjustment if you're a center going to a wing. And Rob Blake said this the other day. It's much more common to see a center go to wing than vice versa. But still, it's an adjustment. And you have to make that at the pro level. So there was a lot of kind of a learning curve going on, I think, across the roster.
Yeah. So you know, I think the whole roster had some growing pains, obviously. And, you know, we'll start with the forwards here. You know, disappointing start for a lot of guys, you know, or maybe like, cause maybe just the adjustment period itself. I thought the biggest disappointment, and it really wasn't even because of his play, was because with Tyler Madden. So, you know, like I said, you know, Hobby Baker finalist, in college, breaks his finger, loses the chance at getting that award when he was first among forwards or scorers, period, at that time, comes in and then just takes this massive hit in the center of the ice. I thought he was concussed. I don't know. I didn't research if he did get a concussion, but ended up breaking a bone. I think it was the clavicle, somewhere in his, you know, shoulder area, and was pretty much out the whole season. So like, that's just kind of tough, I think. Like when, especially like you said, like all these guys are trying to adjust to a new level. And then you're like, you finally get healthy and you get injured again, And like, I feel like sometimes like soft tissue injuries, like, you know, like hamstrings and that kind of stuff, or, you know, that kind of thing is, you know, can be worked on, but like you get hit in a wrong way and you just break your bone. Like, that's just kind of a tough gig or tough pill to swallow. So for him, I thought he kind of brought something different to the forward group. Like his biggest asset, in my opinion, watching his college film was his creativity. And like, not saying that other players weren't creative, but like seeing, you know, the way that Zagoras looks at the ice and how much mismatches he creates. Right. I thought that they could have brought that to a line, like with a Kaliev who's good at finding the open ice. And so with him on the power play too, finding those seams, I thought it really could have helped them. And just like to see him like take those hits and really didn't get back until the final three games. And three games isn't enough to get your legs underneath you. So it just really sucked for him in his first pro year. And like, you know, he's probably heard it his whole life. You know, he's, you know, buck 50 soaking wet and all this kind of stuff like that. Like for him to prove himself, you know, as a smaller forward in the league, I felt kind of bad for the guy, especially since I thought he could have really helped the forward group.
Yeah, and I want to see where he fits. I mean, because he's another guy that could end up, you know, and now we're talking about how he just had his a year where he's coming off injury. Well, this could be a year where he might be one of the guys that's going to exclusively be on the wing. So we have to see where he fits in. So it could be another kind of a trying year for him, but we'll see. I think he, you know, his dad was in the league, so he's got, He's kind of got that background. So I don't suspect stuff like that's going to be much of a problem for him. So that'll be interesting to see, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and so injury sucks. And you know, speaking of another guy that got injured or has been dealing with injuries for a while, I know your guy that's for disappointment has been Alex Turcotte. Is, you know, yeah, he had to deal with a lot of those.
Yeah, and again, similar to you, it's not, that's not a knock on the player necessarily. It was just tough. It was disappointing for me as a fan not getting a chance to see a full healthy season. Because if we remember, you know, the talk of the town right now has been Byfield, for rightfully so. But let's not forget, it wasn't long ago, Turcotte was the guy. He was the next guy in the system. He was a fifth overall pick, no slouch.
Yeah.
So this was the guy that was projected to be, you know, kind of that up and coming top centerman. And really, it took the Kings winning a lottery to even to dethrone him of that, if you think about it. So, you know, and I thought he had a fine overall his first year pro, but just disappointed in the sense that you want him to, if that guy was your top five pick at 1 year, just a couple of years ago, you want him to start to perform like that. And that's not to say he won't. I think he absolutely can. But it was just a tough year for him physically from an injury standpoint. He missed some time at the end of the year also. So just hopefully for him moving forward, we got a bit of a clean slate for him.
Yeah. And like you look at, so like when in his draft year, missed some injuries, was still 2 points per game player. And he probably could have went higher. Not that five is not high, but you know, he probably could have went higher in the draft if he played the full season, because he probably would have had numbers.
Yeah,
he probably could have got close to Jack Hughes type numbers. And, you know, then maybe he's pushing for 2 overall or 3 overall there. But then you go to college at Wisconsin. You know, I followed Wisconsin on Instagram just so I could see how his season was going. And he had some, like, you know, middle body injuries. He got sick, you know, so he's out a couple games there. And then, you know, hurt himself in the World Championships, even though he played through with the injury to get the gold medal. And as you're talking about playoff hockey versus regular season hockey. So like he pushed through it, but then he came to the rain and like realized like, hey, I'm not really healthy here. It's not important for me to play the first couple of games if I'm not 100% healthy.
Yeah.
And so as fans, you're like, okay, well, man, this guy's always already injured. Velarde's always already injured. Like, can we pick a top 10 guy that's on the ice? And like that, like goes in the back of the mind of fans. But what a lot of people don't realize, if you don't follow the rain, is amongst all of our prospects, he was third in points per game.
Yeah.
So he, in a 32 games, 6 goals, 15 assists for 21 points.
Yep.
You know, and only a -2. And so with a team that gave up a lot of goals, he didn't really give up a lot when his team was on the ice.
Well, what I was going to say, and I'm glad you mentioned the points per game, because despite the injuries and despite his first year pro, we talked a little bit too about guys switching to wing. He was asked to play a different position, asked to play the wing, which I think is his position in the organization personally. I'd like to see him get a shot there in camp exclusively on the wing. That's, again, that's my opinion, but he really did, despite the injuries, you know, so the disappointment was more from my end, I suppose, as a fan, but he had a pretty good season overall, the, you know, 0.65 points per game. So he definitely, when he was on the ice, was able to put some points up. So I would be curious to see what their plan is for him this year, because I think he should be a winger. I suspect that you don't bring in Phil Deneau and then you plan on still having the likes of, you know, Velarde, Turcotte, Kupari all stay centermen. I don't see that, because obviously Byfield's there too. So I think this will be an interesting year for Turcotte. I think that, again, I think he's a winger, and that's where I want to see him played.
You know, and I don't know if this is like a philosophy for the Rain, but what I notice is that sometimes they pair two centers on the same line, one right-handed, one left-handed, so that way they could take face-offs on their dominant side. And I don't know if that's a strategy for them or if it just to alleviate, like, the learning curve.
I mean, I know a lot of coaches, especially depends on the face-off. If it's a big face-off, it's a D-zone face-off, if it's maybe late in a period, you'll see that happen where just, you know what, a lot of times it's just in case the center gets kicked out. This way they got another centerman on the ice who's comfortable taking draws too. So sometimes you'll see that too. So, but yeah, interested to see what route they take with Turcotte among other guys, but Turcotte especially, just given fifth overall pick, this is it. Now you've mentioned some other guys that were drafted kind of around his area who are having maybe a little bit more success, you could say. So, you know, I don't not to put tons more pressure on the kid, but it's a big year for him.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans though need to, like, you know, kind of pump the brakes, and everybody's development curve is a little bit different. And, you know, you're not going to get guys that, you know, come in the league right away. And I think, I don't remember the exact number, but it was like, I think there was only 20 skaters last year under the age of 20 playing in the entire league. So it's like, he's still young and he's still working on it. And every year that he's played so far, he's had to stop and go. So, like, you know, maybe the fact that if he sticks on the wing, and I think an interesting pairing, and I'm on the belief, you know, we can get into camp stuff at another time, but I'm pretty much under the belief that the best player should play. I don't really care about contract status. We're supposed to have a full season. His ELC is already blown. We can't slide his anymore. So, like, if he's good enough to make the team, he should make the team. Like, I don't really care about Austin Wagner or who, any of those guys, if they have to go through waivers because we're putting the best team on the ice. That's my belief, but
agreed.
I think it'd be interesting to have Byfield and then have another rookie on the side and then have maybe a veteran that come down. You know, I know Brownie was our leading scorer last year, but could you imagine them Byfield, Brown, and like a Turcotte, like having a veteran and then having two guys down there? Like, it'd be interesting to see something like that work its way through.
It would. And again, this is probably a conversation for a different day. And I know he's coming off a great season, and Brown's been, you know, just a legacy king of it. Huge fan of his, but if I'm being honest, I don't think he's a top six winger anymore on a playoff team in the NHL. That's just, so I would prefer him on the third line. And, you know, if Byfield makes the team, you know, that could be an interesting guy to have with him.
Yeah. So I was most impressed, you know, bringing back to the rain, I was most impressed by Kaliev. And like, I know, like, he was a one trick pony for most people in his draft year. Like, he's sluggish and all that kind of stuff. He doesn't put effort in. But, like, after watching the World Juniors and then watching, like, the rain, I was really impressed. Like, he seemed like to work a ton on his skating, a ton on his defensive awareness. Like, he knows he's not the most quick on the first step. Yeah. So, like in defense, as you know, like, and you could speak on it more, is, like, closing gaps is just as important as, like, your first step and, like, knowing distance and howing to do that. And it seemed like he worked on that quite a bit. You know, we all know that he can light the lamp. We all know that he could probably put it in a coffee cup. But watching the World Juniors and watching the rain, like, his playmaking ability was way better than I thought. You know, he had 14 goals and 17 assists for 31 points. He was first among all prospects at 0.78 points per game. So, like, you know, really, really, like, doing a great job at facilitating as well as doing his job at lighting the lamp. So, you know, I really enjoyed that. Obviously, you see his PIMs are at 24 minutes. So he's one of the higher in the league, which probably comes from, you know, getting caught out of position with his skating, but he's been working on it to where he's not a liability, in my opinion.
Yeah. He, it was funny. I was impressed with how efficient he was in the World Juniors. There were times where he would play on the fourth line, but the second there was a penalty, he's on the power play and he would score. I mean, the biggest thing for me is, okay, yes, he's a one trick pony, but is it still happening? And yes, he is still putting the puck in the net, and shoot, he gets up in Los Angeles, puts the puck in the net. So, you know, he doesn't have to light the world on fire with his skating. And let's be honest, he doesn't. But if he has a hockey brain and he can think the game, that's going to be huge, just so he can get himself into spaces. And I liken him to a player out here in Western New York, Victor Olofsson out in Buffalo. Absolute laser of a shot. Not the smoothest skater, but you know what? He was one of the best power play producers in the NHL last couple of years. And Kaliev can be a guy very similar to that. His skating has to be just good enough, you know, and I think his shot is that good to where he doesn't have to be an elite skater, even a great skater.
You know, and I look at it, you know, we're gonna have to know, you know, for the next 6 years, and, you know, he's really good at the top in the league in those first primary assists. Kaliev is the kind of guy that can find the open ice, and then you pair Kaliev with a defensive minded center, you know, it might be something like that. Like, I don't think you want to, like, double dip and having a center that's only offense and then him, because then you're having that kind of thing. But it could be kind of a thing where, like, you know what you're getting with him. Like, he's not he's going to be a supreme playmaker with his vision on the ice. He's going to have a killer shot. He'll be on the power play one. And if it was me, if I was T-Mac, I'd be having him in the OV kitchen on the other side and just letting them light one-timers. Like
that's what Buffalo did with Olofsson. And the thing is with the Kings, and I mentioned this with Turcotte in the organization, they acquired Arvidsson, legitimate top six winger. But the other three wingers in that grouping, you know, again, Dustin Brown, I love him. I don't know that he's a top six winger on a playoff team. Similar Alex Iafallo, although Kopitar loves playing with him. And listen, if Kopitar wants to play with him, he can play with him. But again, I don't know if the production quite is there for a first line left wing. And Adrian Kempe, we're all waiting for the consistency. We're all waiting for it. So to me, there are spots available on the wing for Arthur Kaliev. He is exactly what the Kings are looking for right now, as an absolute pure sniper. So if he does not make the team out of camp and he starts in the AHL, which is perfectly fine, I mean, if he has a hot start, he's going to be up, because the Kings are going to need that. They don't, in my opinion, the Kings, the big club, they don't have enough in the top six on the wing. And I think he could be a guy that gets there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a situation where I think it's going to be Brown is going to get his start at the top six. I've just because of who he is.
I buy that.
And then T-Mac's going to make the young guys force him out of that position. Because you have Vladimir Fatchkev, which is just light up the KHL wild card. He could not make the team, or he could be the first line left wing, depending on what it is, you know. And then you have Kempe. Can he get more consistent with an actual center? You know, Deneau is going to be there. There's no more excuses anymore. You're going to have Kopitar and Deneau. He's going to have an actual center to work with, you know. And then you're going to see a lot of these prospects, depending on how the Kings, you know, have typically taken a conservative approach. You know, will they do that again, or will they put the best team on the ice come camp? Who knows? But you're absolutely right. Kaliev, with that shot, could play third line and then power play one and just power let him light it up.
Yeah. And kind of along a similar discussion is Rasmus Kupari, who I also think is another guy that's going to have to move to the wing. And I think he was a guy that was really impressive to me this year for Ontario. He is coming off a 19-20 season where he had 8 points in his rookie year, but he is loaded with skill. You watch him skate, his hands, he is so smooth. His playmaking ability is off the charts. Now, and I think he has the skill set to be a center, but we see what's ahead of him, right? I think he's another one. I want to see him on the wing. Now, kind of what I'd like to see, though, too, is as much as I want to see him on the wing, I wouldn't be shocked. Not all these guys can stay in the organization. There has to be something coming at some point. So perhaps they do want to keep some of these guys down the middle for trade pieces down the road. But I guess that's a separate conversation. But Kupari, though, you mentioned how good Kaliev was points per game. Kupari was right behind him. He was second in points per game. He had a big season last year. And I think that this is going to be he's coming off a big injury. He had a big injury at World Juniors a couple of years ago. So I think that and I wrote a piece on Kupari and Fagmo a couple of weeks ago for the site. And I think what's not going to be talked about, because there's so many prospects, is TJ Tynan was the AHL MVP last year, one of the best playmaking centers in the American Hockey League. He's not going to come over here and play third line minutes. He's going to see top 6 minutes. So again, what's interesting is you have all of these centers, right, in the organization, and they went out and signed one. They went out and signed TJ Tynan. They went out and signed, then they traded for Braden Burke. Those are two centers that are probably going to play center, especially Tynan. So I got to think that they are planning on moving a guy like Kupari to the wing if you're going to bring in the reigning AHL MVP, who's a centerman. So, and I think that could be big for him. I think you get a playmaker like TJ Tynan to play with a guy like Kupari if they decide to go that route. Now you're going to give Kupari a great shot at success. You're playing with a really good center in the league. Let's see how you do. Let's see how you perform. And again, the spots are open, and the spots should be open in the top six wings for the Kings.
Yeah, I think I equate Kupari to like just a good beer. Like he drafted in the first round. You know, I think it was 22nd overall or something like that, like in the 20s. And then we get all these shiny new things. Like you're going to all these breweries. Like, dude, I want to get a flight of this and a flight of that. And you're like, everybody's just like, man, like, dude, all this, look at all this stuff. Like I'm drinking like 10 of these, like all these beers are great. And then you just like, you're with your boys and you're just, you know, you're sitting there and, hey, you want, you know, you want your favorite beer? Like, yeah, like that just tastes good. Like he's so good. And then he gets injured and then he doesn't have a great first year in Ontario because he, you know, he's a first year pro. And it's like all that stuff goes to the wayside because everybody wants Turcotte and Byfield to be the savior of the franchise, but he's still a first round pick and he's got elite talent. And I kind of think that the way they used him in Ontario last year with him playing center and Turcotte playing wing, you know, you had the line of Kupari, Turcotte and Kaliev for quite a bit. So I could see him pushing for 3C this year if they want to keep Byfield down to start the season, which because he's the only one that can have the ELC slide. So I could see him being like challenging for the 3C and having somebody else play wing. And then when Byfield and Turcotte come up, have him slide over, you know, because he is a righty. We have a lot of lefty centers. He's a righty and he was decent in the dot. I thought his skill showed like in bursts when he was up with the club last year.
Yeah.
And it shows that not only did he get rewarded because of the good season that he had, like he validated that rewardment with coming up and putting in quality minutes. Like, and you saw as the minutes went on, he played better and better as he got his feet underneath him.
Yeah. And he did have some good games with the Kings. I'm glad they did bring him up too. And, you know, we've talked about all these guys that are centers moving to wing. I feel like we're just blatantly disrespecting Sammy Fagamo, who is a natural winger and he's a very good goal scorer in his own right. So if talk about hype last year, there might even be more hype this year for the Ontario Reign.
You know, I think I just think it's like, you look at, obviously, you know, rated the number one prospect pool by a lot of people, but it's like a good problem to have. Like there's a lot of prospect pools that you're like, man, they don't have any center depth or they don't have any, like they have maybe one or two guys, you know, and like, okay, we have all of these guys and like,
seven.
and it's like, okay, then somebody's going to hit for the center and then we just move everybody else to wing or we trade them away or whatever, you know, like it's definitely a good problem to have. Yeah. You know, as far as my most improved guy last year, I thought was Quinton Byfield. And I think, you know, starting the season, he was like negative 25 in the plus minus. And, you know, you don't put too much into that because that's a kind of a team stat, but finished negative 9. So like you saw towards the end of the year, his defensive acumen and his responsibility really kicked up. He's always been a good puck pursuer, back checker and forecheck and everything like that. Even with his size, like he doesn't really give up. You saw that in the World Juniors. But like learning the center position, like they know he's playing center. There's no doubt that
he's not one of the guys going.
He's not moving, right? So they let him take the lumps. They let him take the lumps and like, hey, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to think. Like, you know, this is your position. You know, and his eventually you saw like flashes, but then the flashes became more like a strobe. Like they were consistently coming and you know, used his ability side down the zone, and you know, he got his cup of tea up there at the big club just kind of because I think maybe because the fans wanted it, you know, and everything like that. But you know, he did well the first game, got 4 shots like in that second period, and like you saw it there. And I think you know, you're looking at a lot of second round or second overall picks go straight to the NHL, but like Jack Hughes and Kako have struggled, you know, and like Lafreniere struggled for part of last season. Stützle was struggled for a little bit of last season, even though he did overall pretty good for his first year. But I think when Byfield is ready, he is a legit rookie of the year candidate. So
well, like, I think, and I want to see them handle, however they, and I'm not saying my way is the right way, however it's handle it right. So if there's any question that he might not quite be ready for the NHL, then let him start in Ontario. And if he in the first month or two just dominates the league, great, mission accomplished. You bring him up and you ease him in, because there's no need to, I don't think there's any need to rush him into the roster. But if he obviously proves it in camp and he looks great, by all means get him in there.
What do you think about this analogy? So like me being a Niners fan right now, you're looking at like Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance and like, when does the rookie take over and everything like that? And, you know, a lot of people say, as soon as you put the rookie in, you can't take him out. Like you, once you've given him that mindset to where, okay, last year he got his cup of tea, they let the ELC slide. You know, this year they have the opportunity to keep him in the AHL because of the new rules that they set up. So if they start him in the AHL and they tell him he's ready and they bring him up, like he's there. Like, I don't think they should put him back down. Like there's no going up and back down because he already had his cup of coffee. He already had his glory moment. He got to wear the jersey. I think If he earns that out of camp, he should be there all year. If he earns it midway through the year, you don't take him out because he has to.
Like, I think it would take. Yeah, I think it would take a lot. Like, I think it would take a really, really prolonged stretch for if he's up with the Kings for them to send him back down. Yeah, I mean, everybody's different, and I certainly don't know him on any level personally to know how, you know, he would handle something like that. But I would imagine if and when they bring him up, it's for good. And it would be, there might be a chance. Now, what could happen is like what Tampa did, I think they did it with Stamkos early in his career. Maybe they put him in the press box for a couple games. I'm not saying that's what they should do, but that is going to be probably more likely than sending him back down to the AHL, I think.
Yeah. Man, we could talk hockey all night, but let's move on to defensemen. defense was pretty bad. Gave up a ton of goals. The penalty kill was bottom in the Pacific. I think they were 17th in the league, 84%. Let's see here. I think it was 84% if I remember correctly. So not great. But I think what fans can kind of look at is like the big club got a lot of injuries. They pulled up a lot of guys. So like the congruency with the, I don't know if that's a real word. I think I just made it up, but I'm going to go with it. They just, with like having the pairings together, like that's a big part of playing D, and you can speak on that together is trusting your partner, knowing where he's going to be on the ice. Yep. If you talk about taking away ice and the spacing, that's a lot to do with knowing your partner's skill sets. And if they're cycling through different partners, you know, you have Plague playing the right end, left side. And so, you know, you can speak to that, like how difficult is that for a defenseman? And how difficult is that for a full core to kind of gel together?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of that. And I think that's why you like to see certain guys that, and you see certain pairings in the NHL or frankly, almost any league that the best ones so often that they're playing with the same partner over and over. And I think you kind of saw it in Los Angeles this past year where the whole plan was to have, which was a little bizarre to me, to have Olimata play top pair of minutes with Drew Doughty. Not too surprisingly, that didn't exactly pan out. But all of a sudden, here's Mikey Anderson comes in, and they seem to click. They like playing with each other. Drew Doughty seemed to like playing with Mikey Anderson. And I think there's something to that. I definitely think there's something to that, to where if you're constantly shifting, you're worried about, you know, tendencies and how this player does certain things and what he likes to do in certain situations. You're kind of always getting used to that, where if you don't have the reps with somebody where it's like second nature, you're kind of caught thinking. So you might be a half second slower doing something because you're still thinking about what your partner might be doing.
Yeah. Huge communication. And when you're talking about that kind of stuff. And so that could be a huge thing going into next year is establishing the pairs and getting people to where they're having a consistent, because we brought in, you know, we bring in Edler, we still have Mata, like the NHL team is pretty, you know, stuffed together right now to where I think that we're going to have a little bit of injury buffer to leave the guys on the rain, you know, have that consistency with their partners. And so maybe there won't be as many, you know, disappointments. I think the disappointment for me last year for the most was Clegg and Holtz. And I think Clay was pretty much draft acumen. You know, I thought he did a pretty good job with the club when they needed him for injuries. You know, they do require a lot of them playing the right and left side, and not every defenseman can do that. You know, and I think the only reason he's able to is with his skating. And, you know, I think it was just kind of like we said with these other prospects, is like being a second round pick and having him be on the radar for so long. And like the Kings talking about they need a puck moving defenseman, and like he's exactly that. And then he got his chance with the club, and then they send him back down. You know, I don't know if they thought he didn't play a good enough job or was because the fact that he had ability to go back down. But for me, it was just kind of like that. It was almost like a bad taste. He didn't play bad. It was just kind of like a bad taste in my mouth.
Not for nothing with Clay. When he came up to the NHL, I was looking at it. He played most of his minutes with Curtis McDermott. No disrespect to Curtis McDermott, sure he's a nice guy, but you know, he's not a guy that if you have a young, good skating defenseman, and you're expecting him to do some things with the puck, you pair him with Curtis McDermott, and it's not surprising his possession numbers. He was a 42% Corsi 4 at 5-on-5 with McDermott. Without McDermott, he was 58%. So there still could be something there. It's just,
and he's playing his offside because McDermott's a lefty too.
It's about finding the, like you mentioned before, it's about finding the pairing and the balance.
So he didn't have a bad season, 23 games, 12 points. You know, so amongst, you know, our prospects, you're looking at, he was second to Mavari, you know, as far as points per game. So definitely had a good season. It was just kind of like, I wanted more from him. And like I said, kept talking about puck moving. And he's like, let's give this guy a shot. Cause I don't know if Walker's it on the second power play. So maybe give him a chance to do that. It's not like we were going to, you know, playoff bound or anything last year. So I thought they could experiment a little bit more. The other guy was kind of, go ahead.
To see Clegg a bit more. No, I was going to say, I like that shot. I would like to see Clegg a little bit more with some offensive roles last year with the Kings.
You know, and he did take a shot. He did took a lot of shots in the, in the AHL. And I think, I don't know if it's just an anomaly, but shot percentage of 2.9%, which isn't the best. It was lowest on the team. So, you know, is that because he is playing the power play and he's trying to like siphon a lot of shots off? Is he taking shots? Like, is he pressing because he's supposed to produce offense? Right. Who knows? Right. You know, but you know, the other guy that I was kind of like excited about just based on acumen and he started the season injured was Cole Holtz, you know, Big Ten player of the year, Big Ten defenseman of the year. And he played three seasons in the NCAA. So you're playing against older guys. Like the leap to the AHL, even though it's still a leap, should be less than if you were playing junior. And so like, I thought that he was going to be good. And then he's the type of guy that like his skill set is very much like, you know, being a defensive minded guy, shutting people down. And then he was almost a point per game producer as a defenseman in the NCAA. So I was like, okay, there's a little bit of offense there. He's known for his defense. He got a little chip on his shoulder. And I just really never saw that from him on the games that I watched last year. And I just don't know if he just never got going off the injury or what happened there, but you know, it just really never happened for him on that side.
Yeah. And you know, for me, and it's going to be a little bit of a cop-out because he didn't spend a lot of time this past year in Ontario, but he's been in Ontario prior. Is Toby Bjornfort. And for me, when they first got him and he started to get his feet wet in the organization, I was like, this is a smooth skating defenseman. He's going to move the puck. I was all about him.
He's an android. You're just like, he doesn't make mistakes.
Right. I still am. But I was, you know, I sit back and I think it's like, okay, so they go and they get Olimata. Okay, they go this past year to get Alex Edler. Obviously, Mikey Anderson is going to get top line minutes. And all we've been hearing about this offseason is the Kings looking for a left shot defenseman. So that's what Toby Bjornfort is. So where do they see him? Where does he fit? And can I blame them if they think, you know what, maybe he's not a guy? I don't know. And the guys on the Hockey Royalty Pod, the last episode, we're talking about he may start in Ontario, which, man, it's a little surprising to me. You know, I thought by now he would have established himself as an NHL left side defenseman. And not to say he won't be, but there's a legitimate shot because he doesn't have to go through waivers. He could start in Ontario. And I'd hate to see that, but they went out and they've still got Mata, who I think, and I know nothing, I'm not an insider of any sort. I don't see how he starts. I think he's out of the organization. I think he's one of the guys that they waive. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they still like him. I just think there's a logjam here of guys. And a couple of these guys, you mentioned Clegg, and another guy that we'll talk about is Mavari, who they need waivers to go down. So where are they starting? What is going to happen with these guys? And I know our colleagues touched on that in the last couple of pods, but it's an interesting discussion, and it's going to be, we talk about the best player should play, and it doesn't matter who you are. I just don't know where a guy like Olimata fits. You got that veteran guy now in Alex Edler on that left side. I don't know. I personally would rather see Bjornfort, Clegg, Mavari even get some of those minutes.
Yeah, I think you're looking at, they brought in Edler because they needed a bigger body. Losing McDermott, you get a bigger body. Had double the block shots of anybody else on the Canuck team. And, you know, if you look at the podcast that they, you know, they talked about it with the Vancouver Athletic Insider. Yeah. You know, he's the type of guy that's like, okay, he's no longer as good a skater as he is anymore. He needs somebody that can skate with him in the neutral zone and everything like that. But put him on the penalty kill, and he's willing to sacrifice his big body. Yep. And like he'll push anybody out in front of the net. So I envision him as a third line guy that's going to get PK minutes.
Me too.
And he's going to do the same thing for Drew Doughty as Deneau's going to do for Kopitar. Is he's not going to have to play all the draws, right?
Yeah.
Doughty's going to want to, because that's just who the guy is, but you don't have to, you know, and Roy is very good. And like the PK was surprisingly great. Like we were top 10 for most of the season. I think we finished 8 or 9, but it was still like the 5-on-5 defense was what was bad, but our penalty kill, which it was fantastic. So, you know, I think you're right. Olimata seems like the odd man out. They could start Bjornfoot, but I think he's earned he played the whole season up there. Like, why do that to him?
I would agree. Exactly.
What development are you getting?
I don't see the fit for Mata.
We said AHL is for development. So where is he developing in the AHL that he hasn't already done? He's already played 20 minutes a night in the league. Why go down? You know, they brought in Edler. And I think last year, Olimata, so that the responsibility for these young defensemen weren't playing 25 minutes a night. And with injuries, they had to do that. But I think they brought in Edler so we're like, okay, now these guys can tone down the minutes. They're not playing 22, 23 minutes a night, and they can focus on their development at this level. I could see Edler also being – they have said multiple times that his legs wane towards the end of the season. Yep. If we're pushing for playoffs, then maybe you have Edler and Mata switching every other game or every third game to get him some wheels. You know, you bring up, or maybe Mata is like, okay, Clegg looks really good in camp. We're going to waive Mata or try to trade Mata for nothing. Who cares what the draft pick is? Let's get his salary off, or we'll keep half his salary or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, especially with the next guy we're talking about with Mervari, like, you got to make that decision. Olimata seems like the odd man out. Now, if they don't impress in camp and Mata is the guy and it is what it is, like the best thing should be on the ice. But I think
losing these guys, it's a conundrum because Mervari, you know, he had a big year last year. He came in, started off overseas. They loaned him out overseas, comes in and he's over half a point per game. He was one of the top assists per game in the AHL, and he's really settled into, which he's not known for his offense, right? He's probably more of a defensive defenseman, but it's how much he thinks the game. And Mark Eddie talked about it out of his draft about he is the smartest hockey IQ in the draft for defensemen, and that means that goes a long way, you know. So where does he fit? He's a guy who I keep saying it, but I just don't see the fit. I'd rather a guy like is Toby Bjornfoot, can he not do what Olimata can do?
Now, you know, now that we're more than talking about it, and before I give my opinion there, everybody needs to go to hockeyroyalty.com. Joe just put out an article. The LA Kings, Jacob Mervari, re-signed for a one-year contract. This goes over how he did last year, so go check that out. Yeah, but sure I think that you're right. Like, what is the risk exposing them to waivers? Now, everybody's like, oh, we shouldn't expose anybody. Everybody thought K.O. Clegg was going to be taken by Seattle, so maybe he doesn't get picked up.
True.
Right? But my thing is this. Like, okay, could Mervari or Clegg improve at the AHL level for a full season? Sure.
Yes.
Right? Would it be beneficial? We need a seventh defenseman. Would it be beneficial or more beneficial for them to rotate in with Edler or give Bjornfoot a night off every once in a while on a back-to-back? You know, have him play second line minutes and do that. Like, I would be fine if Bjornfoot played 70 games and then you give him some rest days off, you know, for his development, and then give Mervari or Clegg some time and see what they can do, you know? And like, and you're really losing nothing by waiving Mata.
I know it sounds like we're beating the guy down, especially me. And again, I think he's fine for what he is, but the problem is, they brought in Edler to be that kind of third pair D, which is where I think Mata should slot in.
It's not the player. It's not the player. It's the situation.
The situation. Exactly. Yeah.
So in your article, you posted some quotes from Roba. I'll read them off here a little bit. It says, you know, about or from John Wroblewski there. So yep. Just you weren't sure how fast the first year North American pro would fare coming in. Then a little bit of an injury to start the season, so you really don't know what you have with him. And then you're sort of underwhelmed initially because he's not the most fluid skater, but then all of a sudden you notice he gets good beats, and then he's facilitating all kinds of offense and making such heady plays with the puck on a consistent basis. And that was what you said with the hockey IQ. And, how you quantify hockey IQ is the consistency of making good plays, I think. Well, like,
yeah, and if you're not a fluid skater as a D-man, yet you're consistently one of the top assists or point producers in the league because you're making it. A lot of times that first pass, you can make that first pass out. That's the name of the game in the NHL. If you can get that first pass out and start your breakout, you're gone and start the transition. And that's what Moverari brings to the table. No, he may not be able to fly up and down the ice, but if he can initiate and transition, that is huge. And I think it's telling a little bit. I think I mentioned this in the article too, how a guy who's not necessarily known for his offense, he was seeing power play time. I think he had 3 power plays this last year. So, yeah, I mean, that's not nothing. And I think that they see, obviously, Wroblewski was pretty impressed with him. And again, it's just how he thinks the game. And if you can think the game at that level, you know, he's going to have a shot.
So he had 3 power play assists. He had 1 shorthanded assist. And his shot percentage is 4.5. So amongst defensemen, let's see, that were prospects, you're looking at Durzi at 6.7 and Cole Holtz at 5.9 and then Mervari. So definitely something that, you know, is going to help the team there. And like I said, I think the best player should play, but I think the defense is going to go to the situation.
Yep.
And,
you know, and we don't listen. We're also assuming everybody's healthy, which as we know, anything can happen with an injury. So who knows? That's going to change everything.
Yeah. So let's move on to the goaltending, which let's not sugarcoat it. It was pretty bad. So Villalta, second year as a pro, you expect him to make a little bit of a jump. Stats are pretty much the same to the first year. 3.43 goals against average and an 8.89 save percentage. You know, they had the veteran in there with Berube, who oddly enough was a king when he was younger, bounced around and came back home.
He's always a Berube guy.
It just, you know, he came back home, but too bad we didn't have fans. And, you know, you would like to keep him around. But we have a swarm of goaltending prospects that are all around, I think, all right around the same, for lack of a better word, ability level. So, like, if you look at their stats, like, they all have, you know, we're talking about Jacob Ingham and Lucas Parikh. And they have all right around the same ability level as Matt Villalta, same stats this last year. You know, all having a little bit of a down year. And so where's the next wave of the goaltender coming in? Obviously you can sign a backup for Cal Peterson when Quick decides to hang up the pads, but usually you want to build through the draft. You don't always want to have to like sign those guys. So, you know, the Rain signed Garrett Sparks, which, you know, he's won a Calder Cup before for the vet role. And now you're looking at a platoon of Sparks, Villalta, and either Ingham or Parikh. Now, I wouldn't mind sending them one to the ECHL because that team name is fire. The Swamp Rabbits over there. Somebody send me a Swamp Rabbits jersey because I would love to have an Ingham Swamp Rabbits jersey. But, you know, it just seemed like he was out of place. He was making and giving up just bad goals, like one-on-one goals. Not seen through the traffic. I don't know what you saw. I'm like, I'm not an expert at goaling, but just like watching how Quick battles through traffic and then and then you as a fan can see if it's a bad goal, you know? So like speak to like what you thought about the ultimately him as a prospect and how he did last year. And where do you see the Rain's goaltending?
You know, the Rain goaltending just kind of in general is I look at a guy like, well, I'll take Villalta. Okay, I'm going to look at him first. Since, you know, he split a lot of time last year with Berube. And I think we talked about it earlier with some of the forwards about how they jump to the next level. It's there with goalies, too, of how much faster the game moves. Now, are the shots harder, quote unquote? Okay, maybe, but it's the releases. All of a sudden, you're seeing pro guys where their release is a lot faster than the level you were playing at before. The passing, the decisions that are made, everything is just happening a little bit faster. And I think listen, I'm not a goalie coach. I was never a goalie. I'm not an expert in the position. But I kind of think that's why you hear so often how it can take goalies longer to develop is because there is a there's a lot going on, and with systems and with, again, just how quickly decisions are being made and the releases as you move up in levels that you just don't get at the lower levels of the minors or, you know, in junior or whatever, even D1, even college, as great as those leagues are, you get it to where everybody has just like an elite release, and it's a big difference. So I think this is, I don't know. I'll be honest. The Kings goaltending situation and their prospect pool of all of their prospects, that's obviously not their strong suit right now. The good thing for them is they have a guy in Cal Peterson who appears to be ready to take the reins, so they don't have to necessarily rush that, knock on wood, because Peterson should hopefully be there for a while. So it's a big year for the it's there for somebody to take that next kind of that next step, whether it's Belalta or whoever the next guy is going to be, it's there for him. But we'll see who ends up kind of taking it.
Yeah. The Reign right now, and you know, had 136 goals for last year and 149 goals against, which was worse in the division. And so I know goaltending is part of the defense, right? So you're looking at the defense struggled, which we said it did. You know, you're going to give up a lot of one-on-one chances, and then you're not going to be able to make all those. You know, when people get into the slot and they are able to, you know, unleash a shot, you know, that's why we harp that as an offense. It's like, that's where the good zones are. You know, when your defense breaks down, you're getting better shots. And so, you know, maybe you can't put it all on Velalta, but there was a lot of bad goals. And so we'll see it's wide open for him. You know, I was kind of hoping for them to go goalie this year. I know Unetti said that they might move back up in the first round for a player. They didn't really say all stat, but we assumed it was him.
Yeah.
But nobody wanted to play ball. So, you know, they have drafted a goalie almost every year. Last year was at Hugo Markkanen from Finland, which I guess he played his first preseason game today, had 25 saves. So shout out to him. You know, but I think that's going to be where it is. Cause I, you know, everybody's like, okay, we're fine at the goalie thing. We got Quick and Peterson, but I'm looking at it this way. It's like Peterson's going to get his next contract. We assume it's going to be 4 to 6 years is what I would assume. So that puts him at like 31. Like, we don't know how he's going to regress as he gets older, if he is going to regress.
Sure.
And he's a small, he's not 6'6" like Ben Bishop or whatever. So like, is he going to be able to take 60 games a year, or are we going to need a 1A and 1B? And right now, you know, after Quick leaves, we don't have a 1B. So is that going to be a bring in a vet? You know, like I said, you want to build your team through the draft. That way you have cost-effective talent all the time. So it'll depend on what they bring. Like, you saw flashes from Jacob Ingham. You know, he went to Germany with a lot of the other prospects, got to play against some men over there. Lucas Parikh with the World Juniors had that shutout, like 50-something save shutout. So it was just, they have all the chances there. I don't know if both will play, if two of those guys will play for the ECHL Swamp Rabbits, or if they're going to keep three goalies and just have one sit behind.
Right.
It'll be interesting. And
I think, you know, hopefully, you know, they have Peterson and he's going to play at a strong enough level to where they can kind of buy their time and let these kids, let's see who of this crop kind of develops into perhaps the next guy behind Peterson.
Yeah. And, well, shout out to Cal, because I mean, he was goalie of the tournament for the World Championships. Robin Lehner did a Q&A on Twitter today and said, who's your top five goalies? He put out Cal Peterson as one of them. So I think a lot of the hockey world doesn't really see it, because like you said, games start at 10 o'clock on the
where
East
I
Coast.
I am, that's for sure. Yeah.
Right. And so most of Canada is like, who is this guy? You know, like, but people in the Pacific know.
Yeah. And, you know, I saw when Lehner tweeted that today, I was poking around a bit, and I was on moneypuck.com. They do a lot of great stuff over there. And where Cal Peterson made his money was, ironically, what you talked about with Velalta, where, you know, when things break down, which they inevitably do, especially in the Reign with such a young team, you're going to give up a lot of high danger chances. Cal Peterson was one of the best goalies in the NHL last year in high danger save percentage. So I think that speaks volumes to a Kings team that had their own struggles on the back end, but they had a guy like Cal Peterson who was, who was right there to make a ton of saves in high danger situations. You don't want to keep putting him in those situations because you got a bigger problem at that point if that continues to happen. But that was a big reason why he had such a good year last year.
Well, he got used to it because he was getting peppered on the rain. So,
yeah.
I mean, we went through the whole group there, you know, some good, some bad. The upcoming season is another hype season for me. For all of you that don't get to watch the rain, get some AHL TV. It's not that expensive. Go 50-50 on a membership. You know, I'm not going to say that out loud, but do something like that and watch some games there. You know, the broadcast is better. I remember the first year they were like you watch, it was like a single person doing the camera and the puck would go out of the frame and then the frame would follow the puck. And then it was like somebody had too many beers before, but then they got the quality up there. So get some AHL TV, you know, for your nights that the Kings aren't on and watch some of these prospects. Like the upcoming season to me is going to be great because I think last year it almost felt like they would have had to force some prospects into the King team. This year, if they make the team right out of the jump, they're going to earn it. Otherwise, they're going to play on the rain. And having another year under the pro, I mean, it wasn't even a full year, like 40 games. Like, that's not even a lot of games, right? So this is going to be their first full year down there. You're going to have guys, you know, obviously Akil's going to get a late start because he had surgery. Yep. But for the most part, you're going to have a lot of guys that are going to get their second full year down there and going to get a chance to gel. And then they're slowly going to trickle up into the main club there. And so it's going to be interesting on what they do, you know, second year with Robo, instituting all those new philosophies and everything like that and how he views the team. I know they do a little bit with T-Mac on trying to have the same lingo and everything. But as you heard, when Robo got hired, he wants to punish teams relentlessly with offense. And like you look at the teams that do that and are still good defensively, like Colorado, it's just like their teams are always up there in Corsi 4. And so I think that's going to be something to look out for the rain is how they have wave after wave. Because like you said, they brought in a guy who was the MVP. You're going to have a lot of these guys first round picks. You're going to have Sutter down there playing fourth line. He's still a captain that puts up quality minutes. Right. So they're going to have every opportunity to dominate. What's your biggest, if you were to pick one thing, like what would be the number one thing you're most excited about for the rain next year?
I want to see where guys fit. I want to start to see a little bit of clarity on where some guys fit. And the guys on the Hockey Royalty Pod kind of alluded to this a bit too. Who's going to be center? Who's going to be wing? That's part of it. But, you know, it's not only that from a forward standpoint, but also on the back end. Who is taking that next step on the back end to really push the big club? Because, you know, whether Mata sticks around or not, he's here for another year. Alex Edler's on a one-year contract. So fast forward a year, who is taking those roster spots in Los Angeles? Is Bjornfort still there? Is he establishing a top four D-man? Is Moverari going to be a top pair D-man in Ontario? Is he going to still just be a top four guy? Does he get a look in the NHL? So I want to start to see some clarity on where guys fit, both on the front end on offense and on the back end.
Yeah. For me, it would be, I think you look at, Kaliev obviously lit it up last year. Kupari got his cup of tea. I really want to see the confidence grow for Alex Turcotte. And
yeah,
I thought he had that after the gold medal. He looked like he was playing his best hockey that I've seen him play. I watched a decent amount of the Wisconsin games when they had it on the Big Ten Network. I go to a bar or whatever and watch it. So it was just, I want to see him, one, stay healthy. Two, he's going to play in the first line if he starts the year in Ontario. Yeah. Whether that's center or wing, I think it's going to be wing because I think that's where they see him moving forward. But I want to see him dominate and then earn his cup of tea. Get rewarded for playing really well, like, and not just because he's the number five overall pick. Build that confidence and then get some games with LA, whether it's six games, seven games. You know, his ELC has already started, so it doesn't matter. So, like, have him earn that spot and get rewarded.
I'm kind of excited to see, and I know it's so much about the prospects, but I mentioned TJ Tiina before. You brought in a guy who's a legitimate AHL producer, so where does he slot in? If Byfield makes the team, maybe Tiina's first line center. I don't know. Maybe he's second line center. But I did a piece on, you know, don't forget about Samuel Fagamo and Rasmus Kupari, because everybody's talking about Turcotte and Vilardi and Kaliev and Byfield, and rightfully so. But don't forget these two, especially if, and I think it's very possible, that Kupari starts the year on the wing and you put a guy like Tynan in between Fagamo and Kupari. That could be an absolutely one of the more exciting lines in the AHL for me, with the amount of skill on that line. So I want to see how they utilize these two kind of, I'll call them AHL veteran centers in Tynan and Braden Burke, and how they, where they slot them. Are they 1-2? Probably depends on Byfield. Are they 2-3? And what wingers are they putting around them? Where do some of these guys fit? And that's what's going to be kind of interesting to see. It's a fun, there's so many guys. There's so many guys on both LA and Ontario. It's like, they don't have spots for all these guys. So it's going to be an interesting couple of months here to see how it all shakes out.
You know, and it's really going to be, like you said, it's a puzzle piece, because if a lot of people don't know, there's going to be 20, I think six, we're capped at contracts right now, 50 out of 50. There's gonna be 26 UFA/RFAs next year, 26. So like a lot of people are gonna have to earn their next contract. I mean, a lot of the prospects will have a better chance because they want to see them develop. But, you know, you would assume some of the guys, you know, maybe like Lazard and Edler and all those guys, obviously, you know, are a little bit older in different situations. But, you know, when those prospects push, you know, I have beer goggles for Fagamo, because like after that World Juniors, I was like, dude, he's coming for Brown's first line spot. He's coming in. And like, I was just ready for him, because like his shot, you know, like would be perfect on that line. Like I was just kind of thinking, like, you know, you're thinking like in you know, the NHL kind of video game mindset, you're like, okay, well, we got a guy that's gonna really to scrap. We got a guy that's a power forward, you know, two-way center and Kopitar. Like, we need a shooter, like we need a young shooter, like, you know, oh, like Kaliev ain't ready, but Fagamo, like after the, you know, that, like he's ready to go. Like, you know, so I kind of had beer goggles and everything like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they gave him some looks either. Like his ELC's already started. Like, why not?
And you know, what's interesting with Fagamo is he's shoot first, but I don't know that his shot is like Kaliev level elite, but he's at a mindset of shoot first, and he's probably a better skater, and he is smart enough to get himself in those situations, which is why I would love to see him play a full season with the creativity of Erasmus Kupari and a playmaker like Tynan. I think you could bring the best out of Kupari or of Fagamo. But yeah, he's somebody that, again, I keep saying this, I think there are top six winger spots open in Los Angeles sooner rather than later, because I know we all keep waiting on Kempe. At some point it's, you know, crap or get off the pot. I've talked about Iafallo and Brown, no disrespect. I think there are spots there to be taken if somebody shows it, and Fagamo's a guy that can do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see how that works out. And I think, you know, he's kind of like, I don't think you can really compare anybody's shot to Kaliev. I think, I put my stamp on it right now. He's probably got a top 1-2% shot in the NHL if he started next year. So he's that kind of prolific shooter, but you know, the guy, like, we need more shoot first guys.
Yes.
Like Kopitar doesn't use his shot enough because he has to play defense. You know, like we need some shoot first guys that aren't, afraid to put the puck on the net when it's warranted, like Victor Arvidsson will next year. So we'll see how that works out. Hopefully they can gel. Hopefully the power play is the biggest improvement next year when they find their roles and see how they can find the gaps there. Cause I know a couple games they went five forwards, like they didn't even put a defenseman out there. So we'll see what Rova's going to cook up and see if that stuff can get going. Well, this podcast was supposed to be 20 minutes, but just like having a beer with a good friend, it never ends at one. So Joe and I just kept going, which is going to be good. So Joe and I are going to be doing this. You know, we're going to be giving this content out rain all year, so you guys can wet your whistle on this kind of stuff. Joe, it was a pleasure talking to you. I know it's 10:40 on the East Coast, so you probably need your nightcap and some Z's, man. So we'll talk to you later. And again, hockeyroyalty.com for all the articles and everything like that. Hockey_royalty or @hockey_royalty for all the Twitter following. And then we're on all the major platforms for the podcast, man. But it was a pleasure talking to you. Get some good Z's, and we'll get you guys another episode soon. Catch you later.
See ya. Thank you.